Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. And we're welcoming back, everybody. We've been taking a little time off over the summer. And now we're going into high gear with a great show today on dermatologic conditions with a wonderful guest. I'll get to Dr. Bender in just a second. We have a great crew that always is second to none and helps us with all of these shows with background research and all the technical aspects. Maddie Levine Wolf is helping us record the show today. She also does background research and scheduling for us. Aaron Collins, Deandra Howard, Matthew Campbell, Sheridan Nygaard are second to none, and we couldn't do this without them. So many, many, many thanks to you guys. Second to none. Also, my co-host is Clarence Jones. He'll be with us in a few moments. And he's been with us since obviously day one as well. We're a little over 3.5 years doing these shows. So it's been wonderful. And then, of course, Dr. Barry Baines is our medical advisor, consultant, and helps us with the medical aspects of some of these shows. So Barry, welcome to you as well. So today, dermatologic conditions with Dr. Mitch Bender, born out east.
Yes. Right near the Bronx Zoo.
Right near the Bronx Zoo. Wow. Graduated at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. And at in the College of Medicine at the University of Kentucky, residency in dermatology at the University of Minnesota, adjunct faculty there in the School of Medicine, founder of dermatology specialists in Edina, Minnesota. Actually, I'm going to see one of your colleagues in a couple of months. Yeah, and has been in this field for a long, long time. And I think he's seen it all, one way or the other, as it relates to skin conditions. So I want to really thank you for being willing to share your insights on a subject that, frankly, I think a lot of us kind of take for granted, you know, just skin. Okay, it's like we don't react to, you know, skin conditions like we would, for instance, if all of a sudden you're feeling chest pain, for instance, or what have you. But important nonetheless. So welcome and thanks for being with us. I greatly appreciate your willingness to be on Health Chatter. So all right, let me start this thing out a little bit. You know, as a parent, you know, you start out with, you know, with infants and, you know, your kids. And the first thing that comes up is like diaper rashes and, you know, all these types of things. So what came to my mind as I was reflecting on this subject is this, and maybe Mitch, you can respond to this. Are there particular skin related conditions as we age? In other words, are there some, like, you know, when you're, you know, an infant or a young, you know, adolescents, adults, older people, are there things that we just kind of happen to us as we age?
First of all, thank you very much for the invitation. It's fun to be here. The answer to the question is yes, there are pediatric skin problems all the way from the relatively mundane like diaper rash all the way to genetic conditions, which often are manifest on the skin. And as we mature, different situations appear. So in fact, right now there are subspecialties in dermatology, including pediatric dermatology, where people take additional training after their basic dermatology training, and they're able to diagnose genetic conditions and various in addition to the mundane conditions, more unusual, more concerning conditions. For example, this is just one example. Diaper rash, of course, is very common because urine and stool in the diaper can be very irritating to the skin, and that usually could be fairly easily remedied. But there's one condition, Langerhans histiocytosis, which can appear in the diaper area and usually at the beginning is confused with diaper rash. But Langerhans histiocytosis is a blood condition which is treatable, but it has to be diagnosed. So one has to differentiate the mundane diaper rash from Langerhans histiocytosis. And one other example, there is a genetic condition, acrodermatitis enteropathica, which is due to a genetic condition where you can't absorb zinc. And this manifests as a rash on the face and in the diaper area. And so that has to be recognized, and it's treatable, but it has to be recognized. So at each stage of life, literally from birth to advanced senior age, different conditions pop up, and they have to be kept in mind.
So what's considered a dermatologic emergency?
Well, in adults, there are conditions that could be very acute. Probably the most one that comes to mind, people who have growths on their heart valves, endocarditis, these bacterial particles can go into the blood and wind up. You can see them on the skin and the fingernails, on the hands. And that's a very serious condition because that can mean systemic infection called sepsis. And if you go to the emergency room, they'll look at your skin. And that's a very serious thing. And those people have to be treated with antibiotics quickly. And their heart situation has to be assessed quickly. There are other conditions that show up on the skin that indicate serious internal conditions. Bad liver disease, lung disease, colon disease, kidney disease. So it's not that the skin itself is necessarily in danger, but it indicates that there is an internal condition which needs immediate attention. So those have to be diagnosed quickly.
And do you see more emergencies with older people, or does it go across the lifespan? It depends.
I think it really goes across the lifespan because infants, including newborns, can show some very serious things that have to be addressed pretty quickly, either because they're already in crisis or they might develop into a crisis. So you'd like to get them diagnosed sooner rather than later.
All right, Barry. Take it away.
Okay. Well, being my background is family practice, I usually like to talk a bit more about some of the more mundane things, as it were, because they tend to be a lot more common. And I couldn't help myself that when we were getting to the summertime, where, well, the daylight today, there's so much smog that you can't tell that the sun is out. But I've just, known that over the years, there's just been more and more things written about, and highlighting the dangers, of what can happen from prolonged sun exposure, different things that how that affects the skin, because I do know that the skin is the largest organ in the human body. There's, and it gets exposed a lot, and to sunlight, and that's something that I think is of particular importance, especially in the summertime, because I know that there are things that we should know about the sun-related skin things, and that was sort of my driver to get an expert like Mitch, here on the show, to have some conversation about that. Because that's, we go outside, except in the winter when it's too cold to go outside. But we're outside a lot. And so I'd just like to, get the take from Dr. Bender on that sun piece of skin because of the exposure. And I'll kind of toss the baton here to Mitch and let him talk about it. Let us know, like, what should we know? our listening public know about sun exposure and sun-related diseases?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. And what I'm going to be saying is pretty much echoing what the American Academy of Dermatology, which is our main educational society in dermatology, says. We're very concerned about skin cancers. Skin cancer is the most common kind of cancer affecting human beings. There are over 5 million cases diagnosed in the United States each year. There are about 105,000 people who die each year from one of the more serious kinds of skin cancer called malignant melanoma. And the overwhelming majority of those cancers are related to ultraviolet light exposure, and starting from an early age. So we are trying to alert the public about sun protection. And we're trying to get people to use sunscreen, to wear hats with a brim, and now wear photo protective clothing. You can buy clothing which is which has sun protective harmless chemicals added to the fabric, because just a few statistics I think will speak for themselves. Right now, 1 in 5 American adults will develop skin cancer. 20%. When in 1930, the incidence of melanoma, the most serious kind of skin cancer, was 1 out of 1,500. The present rate of melanoma is 1 in 60. So in almost 100 years, we've gone from 1 in 1,500 to 1 in 60. That will give you an idea about the rapid rate of increase. And melanoma can be a very, very serious tumor. And the good news, the bad news about melanoma is that the rate is increasing pretty rapidly. The good news is that the mortality rate is staying even, I think, because people are going in for skin checks. They're getting their tumor diagnosed early when it's very fixable, rather than waiting until it spreads and becomes more of a complication. So I think one point that I'd like the viewers to take away is that sunscreen and hats are your friend. I liken it to wearing a seatbelt in a car. No one prevents you from driving, but the intelligent driver is going to wear a seatbelt. And just be cautious. And that's what sunscreen is. And one other misconception, people are worried about not getting enough vitamin D if they use sunscreen, maybe avoid going in the sun. And I myself take supplemental vitamin D every day. The body doesn't care whether you get it by supplement. I think the official supplement is 800 international units per day. I take 2,000 units per day. You will not become vitamin D deficient with a well-balanced diet, and if you take supplemental vitamin D. So I think that's something to keep in mind. It's very important, and a lot of this skin cancer is preventable. The other thing that, and this is stated by the American Academy of Dermatology, tanning beds and tanning bed use, the incidence of skin cancer is increasing in young adults, including melanoma on young people, and that has been correlated with use of tanning beds before age 19. So dermatologists are not real thrilled about tanning beds. We think that they increase the risk of melanoma and perhaps other skin cancers too. So I don't want to sound anti-industry, but we are very worried about tanning bed use and don't recommend it. So those are some of the practical things that summer brings on. Ultraviolet protection. The highest rates of skin cancer in the world, Australia is number one, because the people are fair-complected, blue-eyed, blonde, mostly Northern European appearance. Number two is Israel, another country closer to the equator that gets a lot of ultraviolet light. So I think the evidence of ultraviolet light causing most, not all, but most skin cancers is incontrovertible. So if people remember one recommendation from this podcast, please use sunscreen, hats, some protective clothing. And also from a cosmetic standpoint, we know that chronic ultraviolet light, sunlight exposure, causes increased wrinkling, brown spots, texture change. So even from a cosmetic standpoint, you're going to look a lot better practicing sun protection than if you don't. So that's another reason to do that.
Barry, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, just following up on that, I want to just ask some things about sunscreen. Because there are a lot of, you know, you walk into a pharmacy and they're like shelves.
Yeah, SP 10, 20, 50.
That have a lot of different numbers on. I think a lot of people are probably familiar with the SPF numbers.
Exactly.
On sunscreen. But I had two questions. Actually, I have more than that about sunscreen. But in particular, the things I know that there's a couple of different types of sunscreen. And I was wondering if you could, you know, talk about those, the mechanical and the chemical, and then how that potentially relates to the SPF, the sun protection factor, and what, like, you know, it's one thing to wear a sunscreen, but if you're not getting the sunscreen that offers the kind of protection that you should get, it might be like a false thing. Oh, well, yeah, I'm wearing sunscreen, but, you know, within 20 minutes or 15 minutes, the protection is gone. So I'm just wondering if you could give us a dermatologist perspective on types of sunscreens, and, you know, or one is one type better than the other, you know, just things like that to get in the ballpark for things.
Yeah. Well, let me give you what I think is a practical approach to sunscreen, because the consumer can be very confused by all this. And I'll try and just give you some basic premises here. And there are basically two kinds of sunscreen. One is called physical sunscreen. That usually has chemicals called titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. And these are sunscreens that act like they reflect light, just the same way window glass reflects raindrops. The light hits the skin, it bounces off, it doesn't penetrate into the skin and cause damage. And then the other kind of sunscreen is called chemical sunscreens. And these have a number of chemicals, oxybenzone, avobenzone, octocrylene, and others. The names are really not important. But what these sunscreens do is they absorb the light like a sponge on your countertop that soaks up water. The story about chemical sunscreens, there's some controversy going on that, number one, people have found that some of these chemicals can get absorbed through the skin into the bloodstream. No one has demonstrated any harm, but people are concerned about that. And then the other thing about the chemical sunscreens, in laboratory experiments, they took fish tanks with coral, and they dumped in a lot of these chemicals, and the coral did not do well. And there's a question of whether these sunscreens actually cause physical harm to coral reefs. It's very controversial because no one really knows whether these laboratory experiments have any practical value in the real world. But if you go to a place like Hawaii, the chemical sunscreens are banned. You're not legally allowed to use these chemical sunscreens on the beach because they're worried about damage to the ocean and coral, although it's not proven that that would happen. So what I recommend to people are the physical sunscreens, the ones that reflect. They're absolutely safe. There's no absorption. There's no damage to the environment. And again, they contain zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. These are available. They're not expensive. The other practical thing is the Academy recommends sun protection and SPF, sun protection factor, of 30 or higher. If you use a sunscreen SPF of 30, you're filtering out 97% of the ultraviolet B as in Barry light. This is the cancer-producing sunscreen. If you use the number 50, you're filtering out 99%. So does it really matter if you use 30 versus 50? Maybe not so much, but there were some practical things you should know. First of all, it's best if you put it on about 15, 20 minutes before you go out because it will kind of bond to the skin and give you better protection. We recommend that you put it on every 2, 2.5 hours because you will sweat it off, or if you go swimming, it will wash off. So we recommend you put it on. We recommend using about an ounce. An ounce is about a shot glass worth of sunscreen on your body. The physical sunscreens that I use can give you a kind of a white, chalky looking appearance to the skin. And so there are some very nice, cosmetically elegant sunscreens that you can use on the face so you won't have to have a compromised appearance. So I think for people who are worried about looking like a white ghost when they're on the beach, you can buy one of these elegant sunscreens that are color tinted and very nice. And for the rest of your body, you can use the physical sunscreens. And I'm not going to recommend any particular brands, but you can go on online and buy these. And then the other question people have, what about sunscreen spray? There are sunscreens that come in spray. The right way to use the spray is to put some a light coating on your body and rub it into the skin, not just spray it all over, because it's easy to miss a spot and people wind up getting sunburned in spots. And the other thing to remember is to use it in the open because we don't want you to breathe in these particles, which actually does happen. So you want to use it in an open area. So I myself am not a huge fan of the sprays, but if you're going to use it, you put a thin coating on and rub it thoroughly into the skin. And the bottom line is, there's a saying, the best sunscreen is the one you'll use. So we can talk about brands and things, but find one that you're comfortable with, that you like. There are a lot of products out there. I recommend the physical sunblocks and use it. And if you use it, it will do the job. It really does work. And they're not perfect. They do let some ultraviolet light in, but you're going to markedly reduce your risk of skin cancer and aging and cosmetic brown spots, wrinkling, and other things that people don't like. That.
So let me, there are a lot of skin conditions, okay? And in our background research, which our listening audience you'll be able to find on our website afterwards, but okay, there's acne, there's eczema, there's psoriasis, there's rosacea, there's even hair loss, there's moles, there's all these things, okay? My daughter has eczema, and she's, and what I have noticed over the years, and she's really, really good at managing it. But what I've also noticed over the years is the new medications that have come out. So can you reflect on that over your career? Because I know you've been in dermatology for a while, and so it's like, okay, what have you seen as far as prescription medications and how they've advanced and helped in the dermatology arena?
Yeah, it's a very good question. There has been an explosion of new medications for some of the diseases that people have heard about: eczema,
Eczema, for sure.
atopic dermatitis, or atopic eczema, and psoriasis. And the reason is, over the past decade and a half, people have looked into the molecular chemistry of these conditions and the immunology. And so, with atopic dermatitis, for example, people have looked into the biology of this, and they have been able to develop pharmaceuticals that attack the immunologic and biochemical abnormalities of these conditions. So, we'll take a condition like eczema. It has been found to have a number of abnormalities. one of the abnormalities, the chemicals that white blood cells secrete and the way they talk to each other, they have chemicals called interleukins. Interleukins. And they know for eczema, for example, interleukin 4 and 13 are elevated, abnormally elevated. And this causes changes in the skin function, and you wind up getting eczema. So there were people with eczema that had terrible, terrible problems with itching, redness, secondary infection. We treated them with topical corticosteroids, sometimes systemic corticosteroids, and other things. And many of those people were able to be held in good control, but some people weren't. Along comes a medication that attacked this abnormal elevation of interleukin 4 and 13. It's called Dupixent, and I'm not speaking for a pharmacy company. I have no financial relationship. And Dupixent, you give them one or two injections, and the eczema goes away or gets 90% better. So people, for example, I had a patient, a gentleman at the time was in his late 30s, had terrible eczema, couldn't sleep, couldn't get through the day, very uncomfortable, a lot of itching. His skin looked very red. He was in coming into the office every few weeks, and we were giving him all the topicals, and it helped, but it never really controlled him. And we would see him at least every few weeks, at least once a month. We gave him this new medicine came out, Dupixent. We gave him one injection and it cleared. It was just an
Wow.
amazing thing. And he stayed on that medicine. I don't see him anymore. Or I've retired from practice, but we didn't see him. We had him come in once a year just for a general check, and he was doing fine. The
So you
same
only
thing.
have to have one injection,
No,
and that's
this
it?
is the not, no. This is an ongoing treatment that you
Oh, okay.
inject every few weeks, and you inject yourself kind of the way a diabetic would inject insulin.
Okay.
It's injected at home. And yes, you have to monitor these patients, and there are some side effects that can happen. None of them really serious, but you have to monitor these people. The same thing has happened with psoriasis. People have looked at the immunology of psoriasis, and you probably have seen all these commercials on TV with medications, and they are just fabulous. And so we could take people with psoriasis and who were, again, very uncomfortable, had bad rashes on their hands, their face, their scalp, groin area, trunk, extremities. You put them on one of these medications and they get 90 to 100% better. When these medicines first came out, maybe 15, 20 years ago, the FDA wanted to see a 50% improvement. That was their low bar. Now, if you apply for FDA approval, you have to show 90% or better improvement. That's how far we've come. And this is all due to research of understanding the molecular biology and designing drugs that can interfere with the abnormalities. That makes sense?
Wow. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. And it's encouraging. I mean, I can imagine in your practice, you saw these encouraging things happening, and you're saying, wow, this is great for, treatment for sure.
It's a whole new ball game. It's a whole new
Yeah.
ball. If you go back even 10 years ago,
Right, yeah.
what we do now is very different than what we would have done 10 or 15 years ago.
Unbelievable.
The diseases haven't changed, but our therapy has changed. And I think it's made, frankly, it's a lot of fun to be a dermatologist treating these patients because you get them on the right medication and it changes their life.
Yeah,
They're happy
wow. That's
people.
Can I ask a
Clarence,
question?
Yes, yes,
You're
yes.
here.
Yeah, I'm finally here. Nice seeing you, Dr. Nice to meet
Bender.
you.
When I was growing up, when I knew that we were going to be talking about this topic, I remember this young lady in my eighth grade class. Her name was Margaret. And Margaret had all these kinds of things on her face, eighth grade, a lot of, and I never did this, but a lot of kids would mock her and stuff like that. I'm wondering about the impact of food on our skin. How does that, how, I mean,
the kinds of foods that we eat sometimes show up, and then when so the what I'm looking at is that I don't think people think about food as being a indicate or I don't think people think about food as being a cause of their skin problems. Can you talk a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's actually a very timely question. First of all, your skin, just like every organ, needs some basic nutrients. It needs protein. It needs some minerals. It needs copper, zinc, selenium. You need that to make healthy skin, to make healthy hair. So if you're vitamin deficient, if you're protein deficient, it can show up on the skin. It could also show up in other organs too. The other thing that's really hot right now in research of all systems is the microbiome, the population of bacteria in the colon and also on the skin. And when you have an abnormal microbiome, it's called dysbiosis, DYSBIOSIS, dysbiosis. And people are looking at the effect of that abnormal microbiome on the skin. So, for example, Stan talked about atopic dermatitis. Atopic dermatitis, people with eczema are more prone towards infection with a bacteria called Staphylococcal aureus. And that can cause boils, infections, could be a really nasty bug. People have looked at the microbiome of atopic eczema skin. And they find that they don't have the normal diverse species of bacteria on the skin. And that abnormality lets the staphylococcal bacteria proliferate and cause boils, infections, and other kinds of problems. And experimentally, people found that if you introduce normal, harmless bacteria onto the skin and get the skin population more bacterial. Population more diverse, it begins to kind of crowd out the staphylococcus and the eczema gets better. So, the same thing, by the way, happens in the colon. People are looking at dysbiosis in the colon. There's a lot of research going on trying to figure out relationships between abnormal bacterial colonization in the colon and diseases. So, what you eat is very important for all kinds of reasons, cardiac, skin, just about every system. Brain health is being related to the microbiome. And we're going to be hearing an awful lot the next few years about the microbiome. The other thing people are looking at is a so-called anti-inflammatory diet. Inflammation is being studied very hard because chronic inflammation is thought to be related to heart disease and also cancer. People are looking at anti-inflammatory diets, high in omega-3 acids. If you quiet inflammation down, people believe that you can quiet not only skin disease, but heart disease. You're going to be a diet that is mostly a Mediterranean or vegetarian diet has been shown to be more anti-inflammatory. It reduces the toxic effects of a reactive oxygen species that affects every organ in our body from our brain, skin, colon. And you probably hear all ab about the anti-inflammatory diet all the time.
You know, that's true. I think, you know, I thank you very much for that explanation, because I think that part of what's important for me in terms of this work is that I didn't realize all of the impact that, you know, the skin, the, you know, all those things are impacted by all these microbiotics and things of that nature. And I think it's something that you know, people should know. So my question to you is this: I'm a community member. Okay. How do I approach this topic in terms of telling people about how important it is to take care of their skin, and when do they need to see a dermatologist?
Okay, well, you know, just a few basic things. First of all, starting with infancy, people have shown that if you moisturize the skin, it could be one of the moisturizers that dermatologists use. You can even use, talk about Vaseline petroleum jelly. There was just some papers released showing if you take a newborn and you just put Vaseline on their skin, plain Vaseline petroleum jelly, nothing fancy, you can reduce the incidence of those children becoming eczema patients later on. So, you know, very, very moisturization, nothing fancy, nothing. And there are some very nice dermatology recommended products. I won't talk about them because I don't want this to be commercial, but I just want people to know that. That's kind of important. I think if you have a skin condition that's not responding to reasonable treatment and you're uncomfortable, you're itching, you have a red rash, it's not going away, get it checked out. Because as we spoke about earlier in the broadcast, it can be an indication of an internal condition that you want diagnosed sooner rather than later. Here's an example. I have a friend, a lady, who had a little purple bump on her belly. Didn't hurt, didn't bleed, didn't really cause any symptoms. She thought it was kind of a bug bite, but bug bites should go away usually in 2-3 weeks. Hers didn't go away, and she decided to go in, very smart lady, went and saw her dermatologist. They did a little skin biopsy, which is a very quick, easy little thing to do in the office, and sent it in. It turned out she had a relatively rare blood cancer, plastic plasmacytoid dendritic cell neoplasm, a big name, but basically the skin.
Spell that.
It would take the rest of the podcast to spell. But the point is, she went in, and this was diagnosed from the skin biopsy. Mm-hmm. And she went ahead and got treatment, and it required, you know, she went to MD Anderson and saw an expert, and when she was treated, and she basically is doing very well. But the point is, when you have something on the skin and you're not sure what it is, it can be indicative of something going on internally. And you want to get that diagnosed, because the sooner you get it diagnosed, usually the easier it is to treat. So the nice thing about the skin is that we can see it. We can biopsy it very easily. It's not like doing a lung biopsy or a kidney biopsy. And we could get diagnosis, and we can get that patient going on the right pathway to treatment.
It sounds like this whole idea is really, if you see something, say something.
Yes, exactly.
I appreciate that. Let me say this real quick.
Stan. Go ahead.
I'm a fatherhood doula, and so your information about, you know, moisturizing the baby. I have a daddy book. I'm gonna put that in my daddy book. So if you send me that latest paper on moisturizing your baby's skin, I would love that.
Yeah, it's been known for a long time. I mean, this paper just was kind of confirmation. The other thing is, you know, soap, something as mundane as soap. Well, what kind of soap do you use? Well, I just use soap, you know, what's available. Well, soap is a detergent, and it can deplete the skin of the natural oils that moisturize the skin. And that can lead to, in anybody, dryness, especially in the winter, and itching. And if you're genetically prone towards eczema, that can really get eczema going. There's no law that says you have to use the harsh soap. There are soap substitutes, and there are moisturizers that have natural ingredients in them. I'm going to mention a product. There's a product, for example, called CeraVe, capital C-E-R-A, capital V-E. This has a chemical in there called ceramide. And ceramide is a chemical that everyone on the screen has on their skin right now to moisturize. Eczema kids don't make enough ceramide. So you buy a CeraVe moisturizer, cream or lotion, and put it on their skin. You're replenishing their skin, and they also make a non-soap cleanser. So you can use it just like liquid soap. You just rub it into the skin and wipe it off, and you're cleansing the skin without depleting the skin of necessary moisture. So, and that's not an expensive product. So you could buy it at Target,
Right.
over the counter. It's not
Yeah.
prescription. So that's something else that, in your daddy book, if you want to use a soap, I personally use something like Dove for sensitive skin, inexpensive. I buy it at Costco. Some of the other brands, not that they're bad products, but some people's skin just can't tolerate it very well. So I use a milder soap. So just something as simple as moisturization is very, very helpful for a lot of people.
I'll
So
put that in my daddy
I got a
box.
question on how is it that dermatologists link with primary care providers? In other words, how is their communication, from one physician to another physician as far as coordinating care?
Well, I think I look at us as a team. I mean, I think we do work together. Let me give you an example. Barry is a family physician, and I'm sure cared for patients with, let's say, high cholesterol, triglyceride, fats, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, that sort of thing. So, take a disease like psoriasis. Psoriasis affects about 3% of the American population. Huge number of people with psoriasis of all different levels of severity. It has been established pretty clearly over the past few years that there's a relationship of bad psoriasis, severe psoriasis, with increasing risk of heart disease, atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, building up of plaque inside the artery. So we as dermatologists, in addition to trying to take care of their skin, we're supposed to, let's say, screen the patient for excessive triglyceride or cholesterol levels. And very often we'll find them. So if I do find them, I don't consider myself qualified to give people the best therapy for that, but I'm going to send them to someone like Barry, who is going to look at that and prescribe diet, maybe weight reduction, the right kind of statin agent or other medicine to get those lipid levels down. So we work as a team. I work on the skin and do my thing. Barry or the family practitioner or internist or pediatrician will work on the internal aspect, and the patient will come out better for it.
So let me ask you, your practice has spanned many years. Have you noticed particular population groups that are at higher risk for skin disorders?
The answer is yes. There are differences in risk. Just a few examples. Certainly for melanoma, one of the most serious kinds of cancer, if you're fair complected, blue eyes, blonde, freckled, and you don't tan very well, maybe slightly, if not at all, those people are at a higher risk of skin cancer. Okay. And those are the people you really want to keep out of tanning beds, use sunscreen, hat, and some protective clothing like we discussed. We also know if you take redheads, people with red hair, redheads are found to have even a higher risk because they have, there are two kinds of pigment in the skin, Caucasian people, African Americans, Native Americans, Asians, they have one kind of pigment. It's called melanin, EUMELANIN. Redheads have a different kind of pigment called pheomelanin, and that one does not mitigate sun damage as well as the eumelanin. So redheads are more prone towards melanoma. And also, redheads are more likely to have a particular gene mutation, which makes them prone towards skin cancer. So when a redhead comes in, we really want to look them over carefully, and we really want to emphasize to them how important it is for them to practice some protection. Another thing, another example, people of color, it's true that people of color have more pigment and they do have lower rates of skin cancer, but they still get skin cancer. And interestingly enough, they get skin cancer on non-sun exposed skin, palms, soles, and in the mouth. Bob Marley died of a melanoma under his toenail. And everyone thought it was a bruise, but it was a melanoma. And by the time it was diagnosed, it had already spread and eventually killed him. So if a person of color comes in, we want to make sure that we look at their hands, feet, between the toes, bottom of their feet, inside their mouth and groin area, because they're prone towards melanoma, even though those areas are not getting sun exposure.
Yeah.
So we
interesting.
We have to, you know, kind of tailor our skin exam and focus on the patient before us.
So, you know, as we get older, our skin wrinkles.
Yeah.
You know, comment on that. I mean, is it just a normal aspect of aging that, you know, you see wrinkles? Is it a function of your skin drying out? Is it a function of your skin not getting nourished the way it did in the past? What are we dealing with here? Or is it
What's
just
going on?
Welcome to getting older?
Yeah. Well, the answer to everything you said is yes.
Okay.
So a certain amount of wrinkling is normal. We are getting just from muscle movement. So for example, lines coming, the line between the cheek and the upper lip is going to deepen, maybe lines coming from the corners of the mouth, maybe emanating from between the eyebrows. That's from muscle movement, and also our face changes. We lose subcutaneous fat under the layer of the skin. And as that fat disappears or diminishes, that affects the volume of the face and that affects wrinkling. So that you cannot change. That's kind of inherent in aging. But the thing that we can affect, and we're going back again to ultraviolet light affects collagen and fibers in the skin called elastic fibers. These are the fibers that are used to maintain the integrity and shape of the skin. And ultraviolet light will damage the collagen fibers and elastic fibers in the skin. You damage elastic fibers, you lose the stretchiness. If you picture a pair of elastic clothing, you stretch the clothing, you let go and it snaps back. That's what elastic fibers do. If you damage them, the skin doesn't snap back as fast. It tends to sag and wrinkle more. Okay. Also, the collagen, which maintains the shape of the skin, will be damaged. The other thing aging and ultraviolet light will do, there are two layers of the skin, the epidermis, the very thin layer on the surface, and the dermis underneath. The top layer of the skin, the epidermis, will thin. And as it thins, it tends to wrinkle more and it tends to lose water more easily. Part of the skin's job is to keep the water in your body. And that's why as you get older, your skin can get drier, peel more. It's one of the reasons why you tend to moisturize more. And then the other thing is there are pigment cells in the top layer of the skin, the epidermis. And so people who get a lot of ultraviolet light will get brown spots. Women, if they are on the contraceptive or get pregnancy, will get a condition called melasma, called the mask of pregnancy, where they get brown kind of under the eyes and on the forehead. Okay. And that will happen as a combination of the effects of estrogen hormone and ultraviolet light. So it's not so much aging in that condition as it is exposure to ultraviolet light. Another reason why women should be using sunscreen on their face to cut down on the risk of melasma. It's a harmless condition, but women hate it. It just takes it from their appearance, and it's preventable. So
the last question I have for you is, what about age spots?
Well, a certain amount of age spots are going to happen to just about everybody, particularly after age 40. They're unavoidable. Some will get more than others. No one knows exactly why. I think they're more genetic because I see people coming in with dozens of these benign growths on the skin called seborrheic keratoses. And I ask about family history, and many times they'll say, oh, my dad had them, or my mom had them, or my brother has them. So those you cannot stop from coming yet. We have no way of doing that. They're not harmful. People don't like them, and they're easily removed, usually with some spraying some cold liquid nitrogen on them, and you can get them to fall off. There are other kinds of spots called lentigos. Some people call them liver spots. I don't know why it's called liver spots, but they're related a lot to sun exposure. Again, ultraviolet light. So that's something that is in many ways preventable, and they can be treated cosmetically also.
All right. So, wow. I mean, this has been incredibly informative. I will make sure that you spell out all the different disease manifestations for our website, especially the long ones. But okay, so final takeaway, Mitch, for our listening audience, you as a practicing physician, retired, and what you've seen, what's the big takeaway?
Okay, so I would say common sense. You want to use number one, sunscreen, and practice protection. Sensible, you can go outside, you can have a fun life, you can do fun things, but protect yourself the same way you put seatbelts on when you go in your car. We're not telling you not to drive, but you want to be careful. You want to have a well-balanced diet. I think the evidence is showing that a anti-inflammatory diet, a vegetarian diet, or a Mediterranean diet is going to help every organ system, including your skin. That's a big takeaway. Moisturize everybody, anybody from newborns all the way to people 110 should be moisturizing their skin and using gentle skincare products. Dermatologists, because we see so much cancer, we're recommending that adults go in for an annual physical exam, even if they feel fine. I just know a lady who went in for a skin exam. She was feeling fine. She had no complaints. Someone looked at a very tiny spot on her forearm, maybe 4 or 5 millimeters in diameter. It was an early melanoma. It was diagnosed, removed. She's going to be fine. She doesn't have to worry about that. So going in, a skin exam is an easy thing to do. Your dermatologists know how to look. We have a little instrument called a dermatoscope. You put it against the skin. You can see pigment and blood vessel patterns that your naked eye can't see, even with a magnifying glass. It's worth getting checked over. I'm a believer, just the same way you should have a normal physical exam. You know, people at Barry get your lipids measured, your blood pressure measured. I think skin should be looked at once a year. That's a good takeaway. And if you have a funny looking spot, even if it doesn't hurt or bleed or itch, go in and have it checked, because many, many things early on just don't give you symptoms. And dermatologists, that's what we do. We live to look at spots and diagnose them. That's what we do.
You're spot oriented, huh?
You're spot oriented. So get it looked at. You know, it's really a shame when we see someone with a more advanced situation where it could have been diagnosed earlier, and we could have made, we think, intervention earlier and saved the patient from more onerous treatment.
Okay. Barry, last comments.
Okay, this was so fantastic. I can't even begin to describe it. This is great. What I want to add to with Mitch real quickly, though, is the role that other people play. I become a frequent flyer at Mitch's practice because I had not a melanoma, but a basal cell carcinoma, which is also related. And now I'm on the frequent flyer program. So I go in every 6 months for that. But the other importance is if as a person, if I'm looking at Stan or I'm looking at Clarence and there's something, you know, say, literally you see something, yeah. Say something like, hey, Stan, what's that thing on your, you know, your earlobe over there? Or Clarence, what's that on your, you know, on your forehead? Just to, because oftentimes you don't see it, or it's somewhere where you don't usually see it. So the importance of other people, like all of our listening audience, mm-hmm. is that you are, you know, not diagnosticians, but if you see, you know, a spot that's funny on somebody, say something so that they go in and have it checked out, because to check these out is, it's really easy. And really early diagnosis, as Dr. Bender pointed out, is so important, because diseases that were, especially skin cancers that were really horrible and had a horrible prognosis, now are found early. And when you find it early, you can be cured, and it's, that's the end of it. And you're, you know, and you can get on with your life. So I want to just appeal to our audience to keep your eyes open. And if you see, you know, spots on your friends, that's, you know, just ask about, say, hey, have you had that checked? And then, because oftentimes, you know, patients would come in, and if I'm not really pretty, you know, sure what it is, I'm going to then send them to like Mitch to kind of, you know, go a little bit further to find out about that. But this was just great, Mitch. I just, thanks so much for being on. I learned so much.
I did too.
On this show.
Yeah. Clarence.
I'm supposed to know a lot of stuff, but I.
Clarence, your turn.
Yeah, let me just say, Barry is absolutely right. And let me just second what he said, because the eye is an amazing camera. It's able to pick up changes on skin spots. Non-dermatologists might not know what it means, but they can tell if something looks new or different or is changing. It's our job to figure out what it is, if it's something that you don't have to worry about, or it's something important that needs to be evaluated. So, you know, we can't look at our own backs. We can't really look
back
at
back of your head.
Back of your head. So I think the same way we tell people to do tick checks, for example, if they're walking in grass looking for deer ticks that bring on Lyme disease, have your partner look at your back or your scalp. And they don't have to know, they don't have to diagnose. All they have to do is say, this is something that is new. And it may be something new harmless or something new that's more concerning, and go in and get it checked. It's just that simple.
Yeah. Clarence, last thoughts.
Yeah, I'm going to ditto what Barry said. This has really been exciting. Even though I came in the middle of it, there's so much stuff that I thought about. And you gave me an idea about barbers and beauticians who get the opportunity to see people and talk about changes and stuff like that. And so that'll be part of a strategy that we'll utilize in the future. Thank you.
Yeah. Clarence, let me second that, because you can't believe the number of referrals we get in from stylists and barbers with cancers behind the ear or on the scalp. And we see a significant amount of cancer that, for whatever reason, the patient didn't see, and was picked up either by a friend, partner, spouse, or a stylist. So when a stylist or a barber sends someone in, I take that real seriously.
Yeah.
They find a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a course that a stylist can take for cancer awareness. I forget what it's called, but my stylist has done that. And it happened actually after I had one removed from my scalp, and they get a little certificate and stuff. And so there is a course that's available to help hairstylists and barbers to be more observant.
So, you know, Clarence, you know, this would go hand in hand. You know, Clarence and I worked together on having barbers take their patrons' blood pressure. Okay,
yeah, it's been very cool.
It's a very successful program that we've been involved with over the years. This is something, Clarence, could be added very easily.
Yeah.
Clarence, so, I'll get the information on that course.
I appreciate that, Barry. Yeah. Thank you.
So I want to thank everybody. This has been incredible. We might have to do another show down the road, and we reserve
You
the
talk
right
me
to
into
call you
it.
again.
Absolutely. It's fun. It's
This has
fun.
been
I love to
great.
talk dermatology. It's very good.
So
It's
thank you.
fun.
Thank you so much for being with us. For our listening audience, we've got some really interesting shows coming up. One is how do you manage on an individual level? How do you manage your health? So that's coming up. We're doing on meditation, autism, and then there's another show that we're going to be doing on should we just medicate? In other words, when in doubt, just medicate and move on with your life. So we'll see where all of that goes. So thank you for all of you. Thanks for listening, and keep health chatting away.